Look at the stars. The great kings of the past look down on us from those stars.
Really?
Yes. So whenever you feel alone, just remember that those kings will always be there to guide you. And so will I.
Hey, cassettes, and welcome to Animation April.
Oh, yes, baby.
At the Black Case Diaries. We're three old friends learning everything we can about movies and TV and hopefully teaching you in the process. I'm Robin.
I'm Marcy.
And I'm Adam.
In the mid-1990s, Walt Disney Animation was several years into an era that would become known as their Renaissance. Recent releases like The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, and Aladdin had dazzled audiences with their beautiful visuals, great storytelling, superb acting performances, and of course, their music. In June of 1994, Disney proved that its box office reign was far from over, with the release of a film that many consider to be the best animated Disney movie of all time, The Lion King.
The Lion King.
The Lion King was a massive success by any standards. It became one of Disney's all-time highest-grossing movies and found a permanent place in pop culture history and in the psyche of every child that witnessed the gut-wrenching death of Mufasa on the big screen. It went on to inspire a massively successful Broadway musical, several sequels and TV shows, and of course, a CGI remake. The film's beautiful hand-drawn animation mixed with innovative techniques raised the bar for animated movies in the 1990s. The Lion King soon became a film by which all new animation was judged. It was an instant classic that hasn't lost its staying power to this day. So let's head back to the mid-1990s and explore the magic behind The Lion King.
Yeah,
it's undoubtedly the king, as it were.
Yeah.
Like, yes. I will have to think long and hard about something that I would consider better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In most ways, or some, a lot of ways, to be honest.
I think overall, yeah, it checks all the boxes. Like, it's definitely in the overall categories.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
It's just, I can't.
Yeah.
It's as close to a perfect movie as I can get, you know what I mean? I just can't think of faults for it. Mm-hmm. It's just an undoubted classic.
Yeah.
Perfect, amazing. I mean, what can you say, man?
I don't think there was a movie in my childhood that affected me more than The Lion King.
Yeah.
It truly was our Frozen. You know, like, you know how,
that's a good point.
How the toddlers kind of lost it about Frozen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was a toddler when Lion King came out. Mm-hmm. And seeing it at the drive-in is my first memory of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I got to see it at the theater, and then we got it on tape. And I watched it every single day for at least a year.
I
hyper fixated on this movie. And my brother told me, he said, you watched it in the most annoying way possible. I would watch it from the very first preview on the VHS, which is the little boys packing for Disney. If anybody remembers that. You guys remember that?
Larry, it's like no place you've ever been in your whole life. The first thing you gotta remember about Disney World is to pace yourself.
Think so.
Oh my gosh, two boys are getting ready for Disney and they have to sit on the suitcase to like get it to fit.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I'll have to send it to you guys later. You'll be like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah. I watched it from the first preview on the VHS to the last note of the credits.
Wow.
So what's your experience with Lion King, Marcy?
Not as instrumental, I don't think, as yours. but I did really enjoy it. I don't remember Mufasa traumatizing me that I can remember. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've heard more people saying it traumatized them.
Yeah.
But maybe I already had so much trauma in my life it didn't affect me. I don't know. I remember recognizing Whoopi Goldberg's voice when I saw it as I got older, and so I really liked that. And it was a really good movie. It was one that you can always come back to, and it's like, this is a solid, like, yes.
Yeah.
I think for me it actually wasn't the top Disney movie for me when I was younger, because each of me and my siblings kind of had one.
Yeah.
Mine was kind of a mixture of Aladdin and The Jungle Book, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I would watch over and over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I believe my sister Jessica's was The Lion King. Mm. So I definitely saw it plenty of times. Yeah. It just wasn't the one that I said again. I actually more remember being traumatized by Littlefoot's mom rather than Mufasa.
Yeah.
But still, it definitely had an impact. And I can't remember a time before knowing The Lion King, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's
like,
true.
Like, before that, sure, there were other movies, but like The Lion King has kind of always existed in my mind. It's always been around. It's always had influence on me. And I totally understand why. I mean, if you haven't seen this movie, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Go out, buy it.
Yep.
Please.
Because once you watch it, you're going to want to watch it again.
Exactly. You're going to want to watch it again. And nobody wants to pay for streaming anymore. No, so I totally get it.
No.
But let's be real. Everyone listening right now probably has seen it. But here's a summary anyway. Here we go. A young lion cub named Simba is next in line to rule over all that the light touches in the Pride Lands. After his father Mufasa explains this to him, he becomes excited to take the throne. Meanwhile, his spiteful and jealous uncle is scheming from the shadows. Simba must embark on a journey of self-discovery across the African savanna. Along the way, he will have to learn important lessons about responsibility, friendship, and the circle of life.
All right, so now comes the making of. Now that you know what it's about, let's, catch up on how it was made.
Oh, yeah, spoilers on a few things.
Yeah.
Don't worry, some spoilers.
Some spoilers.
We've already spoiled some stuff.
It's been a while, so.
It's been 30 years. This movie turns 30 this year.
Oh,
so.
Congrats.
Wow.
Congratulations to the Lion King.
Dude,
happy birthday. Disney Animation has a reputation for adapting fairy tales, classic stories, and books. In fact, it was adaptations of existing stories that had brought the studio back from a financial and critical dark period in the late 1980s. So to produce an animated film that followed a new story was a little outside of the box. While the storyline of The Lion King is original, it drew inspiration from many different sources. There's the undeniable similarities that the story has to Shakespeare's Hamlet, as well as influences from classic Bible stories about Joseph and Moses. Peter Schneider was the president of Walt Disney's Feature Animation Division in the late 1980s when he first got the idea for The Lion King. He had been traveling with chairman Jeffrey Katzenberg on a European promotional tour for Oliver and Company. According to Schneider, he and Katzenberg were talking about Africa, and then Katzenberg started talking about a time in his youth when he faced the responsibilities of adulthood. The combination of a coming-of-age story and the location of the African continent eventually led to the development of a screenplay that passed through many hands and multiple name changes, like King of the Jungle, before becoming The Lion King. This is the official story of how the film came to be, although it has been disputed. Charlie Fink, who was the vice president of creative affairs, has also been credited with the idea for the film. He claims that he pitched the idea of Bambi in Africa with lions.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There were stories in the audio commentary that I saw a lot of disputes about.
Yeah.
While I was researching.
Hmm.
So, when a lot of people make a movie and, human memory is, not infallible. And
nope. And of course, everybody wants to be the creator of a great thing.
Yeah. So it's, you just need to keep that in mind.
Yeah. Grains of salt. Grains of salt. Thomas Dish, science fiction author of The Brave Little Toaster, wrote a 9-page treatment for the film called King of the Kalahari. Disney purchased his work and moved forward with the story, officially crediting nearly 30 writers for The Lion King.
Yeah, he didn't get the writing credit, but they bought his script.
Huh. Linda Wolverton, who wrote screenplays for films like Homeward Bound and Beauty and the Beast, developed a screenplay for The Lion King, but left the production to work on the stage version of Beauty and the Beast. Irene Meachie and Jonathan Roberts finished the screenplay. At this point in Disney animation history, there had only been a handful of original stories. Some even consider The Lion King to be the first, leaving out wartime movies like Saludos Amigos, possibly because they were combinations of shorts instead of one overarching story.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, guys. Saludos, amigos.
Yeah, so like the wartime era movies were all originals, right? Well, not all of them, but like Saludos, amigos, Make My Music.
Yeah.
Fun and Fancy Free. Yeah. All of those were like little skits. Some of them had pieces that were based on stuff and, you know. Yep. Yeah, like Fun and Fancy Free has Jack and the Beanstalk, obviously. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, so people were like, well, besides those, and besides Rescuers Down Under, this was
true.
The first.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, wait a minute. Yeah. What about Rescuers Down Under?
So not really.
So not really. No. It's really not.
They just want it to be the first.
Yes, they did. Yeah,
it's because Lion King was such a monumental success.
Yeah.
Yes.
They kind of wanted to have all these accolades.
Yeah.
It's like, well, guys, it already has a lot of those. So
you
it doesn't have to be everything.
It doesn't have to be.
Throughout the storyboarding process, the heart of the Lion King became clear. Not only was it an animal allegory about growing up and accepting your role, it was also a story about the relationship between a father and a son.
Rob Minkoff and Roger Ailes were first-time directors of a full-length animated film when they took on The Lion King.
Ooh, what a big project.
In November of 1991, a team of Disney artists traveled to East Africa to research the landscape and the animals. They were inspired by what they saw, and decided that The Lion King should mimic a biblical or Western epic, with sweeping landscapes of open land. The movie needed to feel larger than life.
Yeah. So often animation doesn't feel that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? And it's still having these huge, wide landscapes and, like, the cinematic score and everything.
Yeah. Production designer Andy Gaskill studied many different painting styles in order to achieve the naturalistic style of animation in the film. He and the team made sure to incorporate as many natural elements into the movie as possible. For example, you can't animate wind, but you can animate the hair on an animal's head.
Right, you can animate the effects of wind.
Yes,
yeah. And like
things in the wind.
Yeah. And like rain. Mm-hmm. Like you can kind of animate the drops, but they're not just animating drops. They're also animating the ripples on the water when the rain falls.
Yeah. There was a distinct art direction for different locations in the movie. Gaskill wanted Scar's lair to be geothermically unstable and add the drama of the steam shooting up around him. He and the animators were also inspired by the Northridge earthquake of 1994 and incorporated that into the scene. The place is basically falling apart around them, but they're like, it's fine.
She's in like this weird hot spring. Where it's like green. It's like a green hot spring.
Something weird going on. It's probably not safe to breathe it in.
I think it's something that's so cool about this movie is that the art styles change during songs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, in the beginning, everything's pretty realistic. The animals, the basic generic animals that are in this kingdom, all look pretty good. It's pretty hyper realistic for the Circle of Life. And then these animation styles really change for the different songs.
Yeah.
You know, and like for Scar's song, Be Prepared, it really does. It's different. Steam is like, you know, billowing up around them and different colors and shapes, and it's looking more cartoonish.
Yeah. Animators observed animals before bringing them to life. They even met with a wildlife expert who brought in lions that interacted with the team. Ruben Aquino was the animator that designed the wildebeests for one of the Lion King's most famous sequences. His drawing was computerized and used to create hundreds of animals for the scene. This was how the sequence utilized hand-drawn and computer animation. Storyboard artist Tom Enriquez spent about a year and a half on the wildebeest stampede before turning the scene over to the CG department. Overall, this 6-7 minute scene took about the full 3 years of production. All of the beasts are based on one run cycle. Then different behaviors were added, like bucking, head shaking, and kicking. They invented an avoidance program that when the wildebeests were sent toward each other, they would always turn away at the last second, like the real stampede. IMDb lists 467 people credited in the animation department for The Lion King. Each supervising animator was assigned a character similar to their personality and tasked with bringing them to life. They acted out their scenes in front of the other animators to get an idea of how their characters should move. Andreas Deja, who animated Gaston and Jafar, was assigned Scar. He thought that Scar should appear smooth and elegant with a twist in his appearance anytime he said something that sounded a bit off.
Yeah, he designed Scar so that children wouldn't really find him to be bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, like, his, you know, when he's talking to Simba and kind of fooling him and acting like, oh, no, I'm your uncle. Oh, we're friends. You know,
that kind of,
which is very obvious to adults, but to kids, you know, who don't have like the reasoning, you know, it's something that like Simba's falling for, obviously, and the kids are too.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason to not like Scar.
Yeah. Yeah.
That for, as far as the kids can see.
He's giving Simba attention.
Yeah. He's arguably way cooler looking than the other lions. Yeah. The Lion King is blessed with a cast of iconic characters voiced by popular film and stage stars. James Earl Jones inspired the animators with his powerful voice while playing the King Mufasa. Even without alteration, Jones's natural voice sounded like the roar of a lion. In one key scene, when Mufasa is speaking to Simba from the sky, the sound effects artist surrounded Jones with 5 microphones to achieve an ethereal echo effect.
Whoa.
Simba. It worked.
That is awesome.
Yeah. I love that part.
Yeah.
Simba, you have forgotten me.
No. How could I?
You have forgotten who you are and so forgotten me.
Mufasa doesn't sing in the film, but there was a song written for his character that was later scrapped. It was called To Be King.
Interesting. Mm.
Yeah, that is interesting, isn't it?
Instead they have Can't Wait to Be King.
Yeah.
I guess so.
James Earl Jones is likely most famous as the voice of Darth Vader in the Star Wars franchise, but also had roles in films like The Sandlot and Field of Dreams.
Two fantastic movies.
Oh, yeah. Two great movies. Also, James Earl Jones, it's really cool because he had a stutter when he was a kid, and it was like a debilitating stutter. He didn't speak. He said he was almost mute for like 8 years.
Wow.
When he was a kid, because he was so scared to talk because other children made fun of him.
Aww.
I wonder how many other people out there have a really nice voice that they don't
use. Yeah. Yeah, he said an English teacher convinced him to talk because he wrote a poem, and his teacher was like, I think you plagiarized this poem. Mm-hmm. I mean, he knew he didn't, but he was like, I think you plagiarized this poem because it's so good, so I need you to stand up in front of the class and recite it from memory to prove that you know this poem.
Snap.
Got him.
Yeah. That would not have worked on me because I would not have been able to remember it.
I would have been like, you're right, I stole it.
Even if I didn't, I'd be like, yeah, I did, because I'm not doing that.
Yeah, not doing that. Also, my memory, like, even if it's something I wrote, I would be like, I can't remember what I wrote.
And then also like showed him like he could act, you know.
That's true,
because he was able to memorize the poem.
You're right.
Matthew Broderick of Ferris Bueller fame voiced the adult Simba. Broderick said in an interview that he wasn't given a script to memorize, but instead they took him into the studio and walked him through the storyboard, acting out the movie to him. Broderick wanted to provide the speaking and singing voice for his character, but the directors brought in Joe Williams, the lead singer of the band Toto, and the son of film composer John Williams, to sing for Simba.
Why?
You know what I think is, I know. I watched an interview a long time ago where he's like, yeah, I wanted to do it, but they called me and they were like, you're not doing it.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, shoot, if they did this Lion King now, they might have trained him.
He's a Broadway actor.
It's true.
He's acted in musicals. And,
I guess I should say train. I mean, just more like they would have worked with him to make it.
Because clearly he just didn't have the sound they wanted.
Yeah.
But one thing that I think is hilarious is that they brought in Joe Williams.
Yeah.
To sing for Simba. Joe Williams is the lead singer of Toto. And what's their most famous song?
I believe.
Africa.
I was going to say Love Isn't Always on Time.
Oh.
Maybe.
That might be a close second, but I'm pretty sure Africa is their most famous song.
By far.
far and wide.
I just I was like, whoa, how interesting. What, mind blown.
Yeah. Yeah. I always think it'd be so funny. You go to a Toto concert and they don't play Africa.
That'd be incredible.
Cars, people flip their cars outside.
They would. Once they leave. Yeah.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas, who was acting on the show Home Improvement at the time, played Simba as a cub. Thomas said at the time that he felt there were a lot of similarities between him and Simba. During one scene, the directors lightly hit Thomas's back so that it sounded like Simba was really sliding down the spine of a dead elephant. And he's like,
Yeah.
They're actually, you know, just kind
just of sitting there patting his back. Honestly, sounds pretty fun. Yeah.
While recording the stampede scene, they picked up the young actor and tossed him around.
Crazy. What if there's footage of that somewhere?
Also, I wonder, was the microphone, like, did they have one on his shirt?
Oh, like a lapel?
Or did they have a boom mic operator trying to follow around the room.
Like, okay, we're going to go up and then down and then go sideways and then make sure you follow.
We'll see, yeah. We got this. It's only for a Disney movie.
Yeah.
only for our top movie ever.
Jason Weaver, who would go on to play Marcus Henderson on the TV show Smart Guy, provided the singing voice for young Simba. Weaver has said in interviews that Disney initially offered him $2 million for the part, but that his mother turned down the deal to negotiate for royalties. According to him, the foresight brought him a lot more money in the long run.
Dang.
Wow.
Jeremy Irons voiced the formidable Scar, Mufasa's brother and the main antagonist in the film. Before recording, he was surprised to learn that the animation is usually done after the actors have recorded their lines. Not only that, the artists and animators that designed Scar used the actor as a reference to give the character similar characteristics to the actor.
Dear, I've said too much. Well, I suppose you'd have found out sooner or later. You being so clever and all. Just do me one favor. Promise me you'll never visit that dreadful place.
Irons won an Annie Award for his portrayal of Scar.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Robert Guillaume played the lovable and wise Rafiki, a mandrill that serves as a shaman for the Pride Lands. This character had a much smaller role in the movie originally, but the filmmakers kept finding a way to add him into the story.
Good.
Yes.
Because he's great.
Rafiki is the best.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Rafiki is the unsung hero of the tale, showing up at the right moment to guide Simba through his trauma and reveal to him the truth about his destiny. He takes Simba to his tree, which was later dubbed the Tree of Life, because of its resemblance to the Tree of Life in Disney's Animal Kingdom.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
It wasn't supposed to be the Disney Tree of Life, but
yeah.
In other Lion King things, they refer to it as a Tree of Life.
Oh,
gotcha.
Interesting.
I'll take it. It's a fitting name. It's
yeah.
Yeah.
In the scene where Rafiki hits Simba on the head, the audience laughed so much that the animators added more animation between that moment and the dialogue so that the moviegoers wouldn't miss what was being said.
Oh, yeah. They just slow it down.
It's like an important scene.
Yeah.
And it's like, you get this really big laugh and then it's like,
oh. Yeah, because it's so unexpected.
Going back means I'll have to face my past. I've been running from it for so long. Ow! Jeez, what was that for?
It doesn't matter. It's in the past.
Guillaume was a film and TV actor that starred in the show Benson and in the film Lean on Me.
Moira Kelly played Nala, Simba's childhood friend and eventual love interest. Kelly said in an interview that she approached voicing the character as if she was reading a story to a child.
Yeah. Which I think is
so sweet.
It that makes sense to me because the way Nala talks is so soft.
Mm-hmm. Kelly also starred in films like The Cutting Edge and Chaplin. Ooh, also good movies.
Yeah.
Nikita Kalame Harris voiced Nala as a child. She has made appearances in many TV shows throughout her career, like Perry Mason. Broadway and film actors Nathan Lane and Ernie Sabella stole the show while bringing the characters Timon and Pumbaa to life.
Oh, Timon and Pumbaa.
I mean,
still some of the best characters. One of the best animated duos out there. Yeah.
They both auditioned to play hyenas in the film, but their comedic timing and chemistry made them the perfect pair to play the outcast meerkat and warthog.
It's so funny because I never really thought of them as outcasts.
Yeah.
But clearly they are.
Because, yeah.
Which is something I never really like even considered.
Yeah.
It's because they've turned their back on society.
Yeah. When the world turns its back on you, you turn your back on the world.
I mean, honestly, I liked where they lived more than Pride Rock.
Oh my goodness.
I mean,
it was the tropical part. Yeah.
The Congo, essentially. Like the thick jungle. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, no, I still would not want to eat the bugs, but.
True.
Animation made the bugs look delicious, though.
I know.
They really knew how to make them look, because they were like, I love these little cream filled ones, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Except when Puma goes like, you learn to love them. And his mouth is completely full of them. I mean, at that point, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe not that. Yeah.
Timon and Pumbaa play a pivotal role in Simba's life, giving him a safe place to live and grow up while allowing him to be a kid. They truly care for Simba, almost acting as surrogate parents when he has nowhere else to go.
Yeah, they're so important because to them, they don't really know that Simba is like shirking off this massive responsibility.
Yeah, no.
You know, and they're just like, oh, it's just this little kid, you know?
Yeah.
He needs to be a kid, and they let him do that.
I mean, right. They save him from the, like,
the vultures.
From just dying in the desert, yeah.
Nathan Lane is a Tony-winning actor that appeared in The Producers as well as many film and shows like Only Murders in the Building.
Oh, Nathan Lane.
Yeah. Ernie Sabella has appeared in many films and TV shows over his career and has had roles on Broadway, appearing in plays like Man of La Mancha.
Yeah. Oh,
very nice.
I know.
Rowan Atkinson was hesitant to voice animation, but he truly brought the character of Zazu to life. Zazu is the king's advisor and official babysitter of Simba. You know, to much of Simba's chagrin.
He's the Sebastian character.
Yes.
He also brought a lot of humor to the film with the help of Ellen Woodbury, the supervising animator for the character. Woodbury did a lot of research about birds and would even flap around the studio to get the movement correct. In one scene where Zazu is Scar's prisoner, he sings the Disney classic It's a Small World After All. Atkinson actually didn't know the song, and the directors had to teach it to him.
I love this part.
Amazing.
I mean, luckily it's a pretty easy tune to get. Like,
here's a fun fact for you right now.
Yeah.
When in the Broadway version of this,
okay,
Zazu will sing. He will always sing It's a Small World first,
okay,
and then other songs based on where they're
at.
So in some shows in England, he sings A Spoonful of Sugar Makes the Medicine Go Down from Mary Poppins. They did one in Disney World or something,
okay,
like in the park, and he did Frozen, Let It Go, or something like that.
That's
it's
really
like,
neat.
It's just this funny little thing that the second tune will always be just a little something else. Because whatever. And sometimes Scar will like it like he does in the movie with a bunch of coconuts. But other times, like with Let It Go, he will groan a second time.
Yes.
And it
I love
says,
that.
Like, that's very funny.
That is cute.
Yeah.
Atkinson is a British comedian best known for his character, Mr. Bean.
Hey!
Look at that. Madge Sinclair played Sarabi, Simba's mother. She appeared in the TV series Gabriel's Fire with James Earl Jones and in the film Coming to America.
Cool.
Nice. Whoopi Goldberg, Cheech Marin, and Jim Cummings voiced the hyena trio of Shenzi, Banzai, and Ed, respectively.
Ed.
You know, there are a lot of movies that create villains that are still so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Scar obviously is still a very fun villain.
Yeah.
But these three are just, it's hard to hate them, you know?
They're right.
Yeah. Whoopi Goldberg had heard about the film and wanted a part. So they cast her as Shenzi. the streetwise leader of the main hyena trio.
Yeah.
Cheech Marin had already lent his voice to Oliver and Company before The Lion King. And veteran actor Jim Cummings played Ed, the hyena that never speaks, but laughs uncontrollably. Cummings has voiced many characters like Winnie the Pooh and Tigger.
If you, those of you listening, most of you are probably on social media. Please go follow Jim Cummings' Instagram if you have it, because he does so much fun stuff.
Yeah.
I think probably on TikTok as well.
Yeah.
But he just does voices with other voice actors. And
it's
stuff.
Cute.
I love Aww. It all the time. It's so good.
Man. Frank Welker was the voice actor behind the animal sounds, including the lions, hyenas, and wildebeests. Welker is a voice actor known for his incredible animal sounds, as well as voicing Fred in the Scooby-Doo franchise.
I think it's because, like, you know, there's only so many ways a real lion will roar for
yes.
you. It's like, I needed to roar specifically like this.
Yes. Yeah. How do we train a lion to roar the way we want it to?
Right. So,
yeah.
But I mean, it's amazing.
You need this emotion in this roar. Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
Some of the most impressive voice acting is non-speaking voice acting. Like, Dee Bradley Baker is the other big one where it's just like...
Yeah.
It's like, how did you feel incredibly impressive.
So cool. So cool. All right, guys, let's talk about the music.
Ooh.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Hans Zimmer earned his first Oscar for scoring The Lion King. It remains to be one of his best scores, as it's the heart and soul of the movie. Zimmer spent 2 years researching sounds and instruments to incorporate in the score. He also asked choirs of people, directed by composer Leb O.M., to sing pieces of his score, which added a beautiful human element to the music.
Yeah, there's a lot of vocals in the actual score, and it just makes it so cool.
Awesome. Like, so, because he was talking about this, and he was like, here's the thing. The best instruments, and like, the best instrument, the best player, what they're trying to do is they're trying to evoke the same emotion as a human voice. And you're trying to get your instrument to feel like it's singing.
Right.
So why not just get people to sing?
Why not just sing?
He said, why not just have some singers in my score? You know?
Yeah.
Which was a really great idea.
Oh, yeah.
The Lion King is also, of course, a musical. The songs featured in the film were written by music icon Elton John and lyricist Tim Rice. Before The Lion King, Rice also penned the lyrics for songs in Aladdin and Broadway hits like Jesus Christ Superstar. The Lion King has one of the most famous opening sequences in film history, and much of its lasting impact is due to its opening song, The Circle of Life.
Mm-hmm. You can all picture it right now.
Yeah.
You hear it in your head right now.
Yep.
The first trailer of the movie previewed the opening sequence with no other information, and producers were worried that audiences would be confused about what the film was about. But the teaser trailer intrigued audiences just enough without revealing too much of the story. I love teasers, like true teasers, where they don't really tell you much of anything.
Nope.
And just show you the visuals and like you hear some of the music and you're like, ooh, I kind of feel what that movie's about.
Yeah.
The Circle of Life was written by Tim Rice and Elton John with the help of South African composer Leb O.M. Shortly after Tim Rice wrote the English lyrics to the song, he handed them over to Elton John. According to Rice, Elton had written and recorded a demo on the same day.
Oh, man.
Composer Hans Zimmer asked Leb O.M. to consult on the song. Lebo then met with the team and provided examples of African chants to incorporate in the music. He was the one responsible for the opening Zulu chant lyrics. The direct translation of the words were something akin to, here comes a lion, father, oh yes, it's a lion, we're going to conquer a lion and a leopard come to this open place.
Interesting.
Yeah. However, literal translations never truly capture the spirit of the phrase, and it has also been translated to mean, here comes the lion, my people, the father of our nation, we hail the lion, we will win, the royal lion wears his leopard spots. According to YouTuber Isaac Carlson, this is a reference to African kings wearing leopard spots.
Oh, okay.
Very cool.
Yeah, and we're going to link to his video translating the lyrics in The Lion King. Leb O.M. has had a prolific music career, and has produced music alongside popular film composers like Jerry Goldsmith, Hans Zimmer, and James Newton Howard. Lebo didn't just provide his insight for the Circle of Life. Hans Zimmer considered him to be his tour guide to the soundtrack, and he was a driving force in how the songs were produced throughout the film, even directing the chorus of people that provided their voices in several songs.
It has such an authentic African flair to it throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
And it really, it's like big thanks to this guy because it just feels so, I love the vibe of this music so much.
Oh, yeah.
He was kind of like a dream come true to them because that, you know, when he came in and he was like, oh, here's how we should do these things. And like, here's the language and here's the instruments and the, because before this was just a movie about what we think Africa is. But now it's a movie that actually, you know, celebrates parts of Africa. The opening of The Lion King was originally going to include dialogue and a visual introduction to Scar, the film's main antagonist. But ultimately, the filmmakers decided that the version was too chatty and that a visual introduction would be more powerful. After producing the opening, their only concern was that the rest of the film wouldn't live up to its opening sequence.
I mean, that's a fair thing to worry about. It's a fair
concern, yeah. It's a very good opening sequence. The Circle of Life was performed by Lebo M. and Carmen Twilley as the lead vocalists.
It's unparalleled, man.
And one of the beautiful things about this movie is that they do a lot of shots that mimic what would a shot that would be in a live action film.
Yeah.
You know, like they do the rack focus where they're focused on something far away and then they zoom, you know, focus on something closer.
Yeah, with and the ant.
Yes, with the ant.
The ant is like the, you know. It,
so they do the zebras and then they zoom
because
to the ant.
And it's also a visual representation of how everything's important.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Everything matters. Yep. Everything is part of the circle of life.
Yep.
You see like the big stuff and they rack focus to this little ant.
Yep.
You know, it's like, it's all important.
Yep. It's all there. It all plays a part.
If you want your animated movie to look sick as hell, add a rack focus.
But then there's other shots where like they go around the characters. Why they had to make a live action version, who the hell knows?
Right
When this is already basically live action in animation. I know, not even live action, like I Just Can't Wait to Be King is the only song sung by a child and therefore has more childlike animation. The sequence is bright and colorful, and the animals are less realistic. This was a lot of fun for the animators because they were able to take a break from the realism from the opening song.
When Robin and I went through all of the Disney animated classics, we kind of developed this realization of there's always a part in every movie where the animators get to have fun.
Show off.
It's like, this is the show off part where they the animation takes a step up and goes crazy. And I was thinking, is this song that? Because The Lion King, arguably the whole movie is that.
Is them doing that kind of stuff.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because every song, maybe less so at like Can You Feel the Love Tonight, doesn't go as crazy. It's more about what's happening rather than the style of it.
Yeah.
But I would argue that Be Prepared and I Can't Wait to Be King, Just Can't Wait to Be King, kind of do that.
That and, I mean, Hakuna Matata also. But I feel like I Just Can't Wait to Be King probably has the wackiest animation.
Certainly.
And like, the, all the different, because they do the thing, too, where they kind of, like, have, like, the fake water, you know, when Zazu's, like, kind of preaching on the rock or whatever, and they just, like, the fake waves and, like, you know, it's very different than the rest of the movie.
Yeah. So I think this is the most likely candidate for that spot.
Yeah.
But I mean, the whole movie's freaking beautiful. Pretty, so
Yep. The emphasis on childhood in the song is to symbolize Simba's innocence. He's singing about how great it would be to be king, but doesn't understand the implication that his father will have to die in order for that to happen.
Right. He like doesn't get that.
No. He also doesn't understand the immense responsibility that will land on his shoulders.
Yeah. Yeah. We hate to say it, but Zazu's right.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean.
As much. Definitely as a kid watching it, you're like, oh, boo, go Zazu, kids. Go away. Like, The song was performed by Jason Weaver, Laura Williams, and Rowan Atkinson.
Be Prepared was originally called Thanks to Me, but the filmmakers wanted Scar to seem more calculated and evil and show how he plotted Mufasa's death. They moved the song so that it happened earlier in the film and established that Scar was the villain.
Yeah, the song was originally later. They moved it, and that way it's more like,
yeah,
you could see that he was actually like planning this. Mm-hmm. He told them about it, like, be ready.
Yep.
Jeremy Irons worked on the vocals for the song for 8 hours, blowing out his voice in the process. Jim Cummings, who was playing Ed the Hyena, stepped in to finish the song for him.
I was listening to it today, and I was like, I was listening for the Jim Cummings part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I can find it. I can hear it.
Nice. Yep.
Yeah.
But damn.
It's so good.
He does such a good job.
He did such a good job matching his voice. It's so good.
It's incredible.
But you do kind of start to, you're like, oh, there he is.
If you really, really listen.
If you know what his voice sounds like and you're really listening.
Mm-hmm. Whoopi Goldberg and Cheech Marin also performed in the song as some of that perfect Broadway talking moments.
Yes, talking.
Yes.
Awesome. The animators had a lot of discussions about how much fascist imagery they wanted to use in the sequence. They included an image of the hyenas marching in step, akin to footage of Hitler and the Nazis.
Very pointed, very, very purposeful.
Yep. When Simba meets Timon and Pumbaa in the film, the characters were originally going to sing a song called Warthog Rhapsody.
Sounds pretty hilarious.
But they needed the song to convey that Simba was turning his back on his responsibilities. So they named the song after the Swahili phrase, Hakuna Matata.
Then maybe you need a new lesson. Repeat after me. Hakuna Matata.
What?
Hakuna Matata. It means no worries.
The team reportedly found the term in a Swahili phrase book, and it translates to mean no trouble.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or no worries.
Or no worries. Contextually.
Out. Exactly. Yeah. Timon and Pumbaa were originally going to be characters that grew up with Simba, but the story department thought it would be more interesting if they were outcasts that hung out on the edge of society. Hakuna Matata was performed by Nathan Lane, Ernie Sabella, Jason Weaver, and Joseph Williams.
Yeah.
It's very interesting if they had like been friends with Simba as a kid.
Yeah.
And all kind of like, would they just follow Simba?
I would imagine the plan was that when they found him, they were also kids and they saved him. And then all three of them grew
together.
Oh,
I guess that could work too. Yeah.
I imagine that's probably what the plan was.
Interesting. Either way, I like this. I like what they ended up with.
Yeah.
Because, as we mentioned before, they kind of become this the surrogate.
They're
parents.
More like parents than like, you know, friends. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Parents that become friends once Simba is like more of
an adult.
A closer age.
Yeah.
Which I feel like they said is still only like 2 years.
Yeah.
it's only been a couple of years. Yeah. Can You Feel the Love Tonight was the first song that Elton John wrote for the film. This song opens with a duet between Timon and Pumbaa, played by Nathan Lane and Ernie Sabella. It quickly transitions into a voiceover song sung by Crystal Edwards, with parts sung by Joe Williams and Sally Dworsky as Simba and Nala.
Aww. You know how we've also talked about how there's always kind of the bathroom part, go get refill part of the movie. You can walk away from this one.
Yeah.
I don't want to. Still,
yeah,
in this part, you know, it's the slowest song in the movie,
yeah.
But I'm like, I still like it,
yeah,
I still like listening to it.
It's a good song,
yeah.
It's definitely not like my favorite song, I think.
No,
Circle of Life's better, but I do,
absolutely.
I do really like the song though,
yeah.
And kind of slows the action of the movie and lets you kind of process, mm-hmm. and they rekindle their relationship.
Yep.
And
Nala has that great like come hither look.
What are you talking about?
Oh, come on. Hey, I mean, they talk
lions
about it.
Lions can't have the come hither look.
I don't know. Have you seen The Lion King?
I have.
Come on. They talk about it in the commentary, too.
Well, there you go. Lyricist Tim Rice said that he wrote the song about 18 different times before he and Elton John landed on the final product. They considered having Timon and Pumbaa sing the entire thing, but having the funny duo sing the intro and the outro to the song helped balance the drama with comedy. The scene right before this song was one of the toughest to write. Nala discovers that while Scar has been mercilessly running the Pride Lands for the last several years, Simba, the heir to the throne, has not only been alive, but has been hiding from his responsibilities. Nala had to be understandably upset, but she couldn't be too angry because the love song was coming up.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
She had to be happy to see him first.
Yep. Yes.
And then upset.
And then she's like, bro, it doesn't rain anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always true. Cloudy.
It's always cloudy.
But yet no rain.
Yeah.
Scar is a terrible leader.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that it takes place only over a couple years, and
and
you can see the impact of terrible leadership and how much of a lasting bad impact that could have.
I think, doesn't he say, like, he welcomes the hyenas in and kind of just lets them
do whatever.
So
they want.
So all of the like prey animals either are killed or leave.
Yeah. Yep.
So fast.
Yeah. Yep. So the Nala leaves because she's hungry.
Yeah. She's just going for help or whatever.
Yep.
The Morning Report was a song written for the movie, but it was cut before the film made it to theaters. In 2003, Disney re-released The Lion King on DVD and added a version of the song into the movie. It was performed by Jeff Bennett and Evan Saucedo. In the original theatrical release, The Morning Report is simply Zazu reporting the daily news to Mufasa with a list of animal puns.
Good morning, sire.
Good morning, Zazu.
Checking in with the morning report.
Fire away.
Well, the buzz from the bees is that the leopards are in a bit of a spot.
Oh, really?
And it's better for it.
It's way better. Yeah. I don't like the song. It's not that it's a bad song. It's just, I just like the dialogue more. When Zazu was just talking, and it fits way better with Simba pouncing on him and like the scene just flows better.
Yeah, Mufasa teaching the pouncing and all that stuff. It's just like, I love how Zazu is so kind of distracted by his own voice that Mufasa is like, oh, turn around. It's like, oh, what are you doing? Pouncing lesson. Oh, yes, okay, pouncing lesson. Pouncing lesson!
He's like, turn around.
Honestly, he's got a great gig, to be honest. He has guaranteed, like,
protection.
He will, you know, he might get a little, you know, pounced on by the you know, little Simba and stuff.
Right.
But, like, honestly, he gets to live, so.
Yeah.
He's got it pretty sweet.
He just has to fly around and like get updates from everybody.
Exactly.
That's
awesome.
Yeah. All right. So now that we've talked about how it's been made, now we can talk about how it was received.
Yeah.
And its, you know, awards and legacy. The Lion King grossed $422.8 million in North America and would earn a worldwide total of nearly $1 billion. After its initial run, it ranked as the highest-grossing animated film of all time, and it would hold that place all the way until 2010 with Toy Story 3.
Yes.
Over time, it would drop to 13th in the ranking, but it still remains the highest-grossing hand-drawn animated film ever made.
But none of that's factored for inflation.
Yes.
I am going to say
that. That is true. Yeah, that's a good point. Roger Ebert gave the film 3.5 stars and called it a superbly drawn animated feature, the saga of Simba, which in its deeply buried origins owes something to Greek tragedy and certainly to Hamlet. is a learning experience as well as entertainment.
Yeah, it's nice.
As you might have expected, The Lion King has won and been nominated for numerous awards, including 4 Academy Awards, all of which were for its music, like for Can You Feel the Love Tonight, Hakuna Matata, and Circle of Life, which were all nominated for Best Original Song, and Can You Feel the Love Tonight was the winner. The other Oscar was for Hans Zimmer's score.
Yeah, so it won 2 Oscars, but it was nominated for 4.
Correct.
Oh, okay. The movie also brought home Annie Awards, one for Best Animated Feature. The head of story, Brenda Chapman, won for best individual achievement for story contribution in the field of animation. As the story supervisor, she oversaw the team of storyboard artists and guided them while creating sequences. Chapman would go on to direct The Prince of Egypt and Brave.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Awesome. This is truly a decorated film with over 40 awards across the industry.
I can't believe you didn't want to list them all.
Yeah. I mean, I could've.
We could go through them one by one.
Yeah. No, that's fine.
Over 40 wins and then God knows how many nominations.
Oh man, yeah. With the huge success of the film, as you'd expect, it spawned many other media pieces. From the arguably only good straight-to-VHS sequel, The Lion King 2, Simba's Pride, to the spin-off TV series, The Lion King's Timon and Pumbaa, to the still-performing highest-grossing Broadway show of all time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Oh.
Which, man, if they could just release that on Disney Plus or something.
I mean, why don't they?
Yeah.
Why don't they?
Come on.
Please?
They did Hamilton. Come on. Lion King.
There's a recording.
People will still go to see it.
People will
You're not going to lose money. Exactly. You'll just make it more available to people that can't go and see Broadway all the time.
Yeah, people who live in maybe Ohio.
Exactly.
And can't fly to New York and go to Broadway shows.
It also had video games, a half sequel, another TV series, and whether you like it or not, the current holder of the highest grossing animated film. That being the CGI remake from 2019.
Not factored for inflation.
Again, whether you like it or not, it does add to the lasting impact of the original movie because it made as much money as it did because of people's nostalgia for the original.
Yeah.
All right. We move on to fun facts.
Yay!
Everyone loves fun facts.
It's the best part of the episode.
And in fact, there are gazillions out there. I picked a few.
All right.
Here we go.
If you pause at the right time, you can see the spelling of SFX in the sky in that one shot
it's
that everybody
SFX.
Talks.
Yeah.
Yes.
F.
Special effects is what it's a reference to.
It's supposed to say special effects. It's actually so funny because when I first started researching this, I went to like the old New York Times database and I searched Lion King and I put in the date range and all the first articles that popped up were about sex in the Lion King.
No.
It was this huge scandal.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
If you pause it just right.
What?
Yeah. No, legitimately, we used to try to pause it when we were kids. Yeah. We would try to catch it and everything. Mm-hmm. But really, it's SFX. You can see it in the picture.
Yeah.
Yep.
A few weeks before the film opened, Elton John was given a special screening where Can You Feel the Love Tonight was left out. Of course, he told Jeffrey Katzenberg to have the song put back in.
And when Elton John tells you to do something,
you do it.
According to some Disney insiders, the team working on The Lion King was supposedly the B team, who were, quote, kept busy while the A team worked on Pocahontas.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Because I think it's true.
Isn't that funny?
I think that there really is a lot of evidence for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One, the production time of The Lion King, significantly shorter than the production time of Pocahontas. We've got first-time directors working on The Lion King.
Yeah.
Also, the music team. Alan Menken is working on Pocahontas at this time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they pulled in Elton John, and by no means is Elton John like a B.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
But, I mean, they just happened to get some... They just happened to have a good composer for the songs. It would have been Alan Menken if he hadn't been working on Pocahontas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it would have been a completely different movie.
Yeah.
But it's also funny because I know that while I was reading about this, the studio that was, you know, in charge of all of it was much more confident in Pocahontas.
Which did well.
It did well,
but it wasn't The Lion King.
It didn't do Lion King numbers, baby. Mm-hmm. The line, "What do you want me to do? Dress and drag and do the hula?" was improvised by Nathan Lane.
Aww.
In early drafts, Scar was a rogue lion with no relation to Mufasa. Eventually, however, the story writers thought relating him to Mufasa would be more interesting because he would be a threat from within. This is partly why Scar and Mufasa differ so much visually.
That makes so much sense. Because I always wondered as a kid, I was like, why does he look so different?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, this is what the key part that made it seem like Hamlet.
Yeah.
Was the brother, yes. When they made him brothers.
Yep.
That was like the moment, because before they weren't going to do that. So mm-hmm. that was kind of an accidental, like, oh, this might be more interesting if they're family.
Yeah.
And then it was like, ooh, well, oh well.
Yes.
You know.
Plus, if you kind of relate it to kind of how real lions act, it's mm-hmm. rare that there are more than one male
yes.
in a pride. And if there is, they're usually siblings.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So if Scar weren't Mufasa's brother, he would have been kicked to the curb.
Yes.
Yep.
There is a lost verse of Hakuna Matata that was storyboarded, which explains Timon's whole situation. It was later used in Lion King 1.5.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. I always wondered why they talk about Pumbaa, but not Timon.
Yeah, they were gonna, but it's more fun to have the
fart joke.
I was gonna say the whole sequence of Simba growing up and him singing.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
But also farts. And lastly, this was Disney's first animated film to be dubbed into the Zulu language for its African release.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is nice.
Well, do you guys have any thoughts before we wrap up?
This movie is, everyone understands that it is absolutely iconic.
A masterpiece.
And a masterpiece.
Yeah. Yep.
And one of the top tier. This is... When people talk about movies as art, this is art.
Yeah.
This is a seriously amazing movie that if anyone hasn't seen it, you are missing out. Not a joke.
Yeah.
Like, go do yourself the favor and watch it, because it's beautiful. It's has wonderful music. It's funny.
Yep.
It is funny.
It's just got, it's heartwarming and heart-wrenching at the same time. It's just so freaking good.
Yeah.
It's that.
Yep.
If you haven't watched it in a long time, I think you'll be surprised by how funny it is.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it really does have a lot of really funny moments. Not everybody likes this movie necessarily, but there is something in it for everybody, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like, so everybody in my family liked it.
Yeah.
There were songs that everybody liked. Sure, people would get up and go to the bathroom during the Can You Feel Love Tonight, but yeah.
Yep. But it's got some bops.
But it really does. And just like, I have all of it memorized. Like, it's just there in the back of my head.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And it was such a big part of my life. And I love it so much. You know, I think this is just the beginning of my love of movies. And I think it's just a really important movie for me. I mean, this is a movie that if you have a chance to ever see it in theaters, you should go. Because it's just such a great experience.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. so fun. Yeah. Not the CGI one, just the animated original movie.
And they've been bringing movies back to theaters a little bit more often than they used to recently. So be on the lookout. Like you said, it is the 30th anniversary.
So hopefully.
So maybe they will.
It could be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I can't tell you how many times when I was watching the commentary where I had to rewind it because I was paying too much attention to the movie than to the commentary.
Know what they said, yeah.
Yes. Because you can still kind of hear what they, you know, the movie in the background. And so there was times I was like, oh, shoot. Dang it. I missed like a whole like 10-minute thing because
it's incredibly engaging. You can't look away.
Yeah. Just about perfection, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just about, yeah.
Truly is.
The Lion King is a film that shaped a generation of Disney fans. There is no overstating its massive commercial and critical success. It would be almost 10 years later that Disney would evoke that kind of cultural response with Frozen. Although Disney Animation had already made its comeback with classics like The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, The Lion King cemented Disney's spot as the most popular animation studio of its time. This film had something for everyone. There was potty humor for the kids, adult references that kept the older audience entertained, and songs that could make anyone sing along. But beyond that, The Lion King built on a tradition of storytelling that had been around for hundreds of years. It incorporated familiar plot lines and story beats while adding its own magic. It's a story about growing up. It's about losing innocence and grief, but it's also about the connection that holds us all together. And from the moment that audiences saw that animated sun rise over the Pride Lands with those attention-grabbing vocals, it was clear that in terms of animation, Disney was once again the king.
And I mean, that all of those movies, I mean, the Renaissance era movies still are extremely popular.
Incredibly.
So. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess that is a case closed. All right, our first case of animation, April. We did it!
We did it! I am so happy that this month comes after the one that's not as fun. The February.
Yeah.
Because,
animation April.
It's my favoriteist.
Yeah, animation's the best.
It is. So and it's a medium.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not a genre.
Not a genre. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. And thank you to our patrons, John, Jacob, JD, Anthony, Shelley, and Bob.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you all.
I think I got all of you.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for listening to this episode. And I hope you enjoyed the extended version of this episode.
Yeah.
And check us out at blackcasediaries.com for notes and other things.
Yeah.
And other past episodes. And we will see you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Whoa, time out. Let me get this straight. You know her. She knows you. But she wants to eat him. And everybody's okay with this? Did I miss something?